Welcome to Time to Teach with Tammy, the podcast that gives tips, advice, and suggestions to teachers by your old teacher. So sit back and enjoy. And oh yeah, don't forget to subscribe. Episode 4, titled Hobbies, Passions, and the Pursuit of Happiness. Today, our show is going to explore the importance of having hobbies and passions and really cultivating your interests that are outside of the field of teaching. Before we really dive into those hobbies and passions and really how to find the time to cultivate those, I'd like to start by taking a look at positive psychology. The more I thought about this topic and explored it, I really just kept coming back to positive psychology. I've mentioned in a previous episode that I'm very interested in positive psychology. So I purposely seek things that are going to add to the happiness factor of my life. But I do think maybe for those of us who maybe don't really understand the field of positive psychology, or maybe it's new to us, and I'm not an expert, so I don't have a whole lot of information. But I think it is important to understand a little bit about it, because that is where the hobbies and passions and other interests are going to tie in, because of the positive or happy factor that those things can add to our lives. So I just thought that was a really good starting point for us. So I just want to look at the definition of positive psychology. You can probably find this definition worded differently, but this comes from a Pennsylvania State website. This is their definition that they have given to the field of positive psychology. Positive psychology is the scientific study of the strengths that enable individuals and communities to thrive. The field is founded on the belief that people want to lead meaningful and fulfilling lives, to cultivate what is best within themselves, and to enhance their experience of love, work, and play. Now, I think it's worth noting that there are really a long list of positive emotions that have been connected with positive psychology. And I also, before I even continue, I want to make it clear that when we're talking about positive psychology and positive emotions, even though the word happy might be used a lot and you might hear me using it, I think it's important to understand that in the field of positive psychology, there is the understanding that a person may not always feel happy. Maybe it's just a feeling of contentment, or maybe it's just a positive way to respond and or react to something. So it's important to establish that understanding before we even proceed with this, because positive doesn't always necessarily mean that we are in a happy state. And I think it's very impossible to always feel happy, right? But definitely to enjoy life, we want to be working towards as many positive as emotions as possible, because this has been shown to really enhance a person's life, which is why the field of positive psychology exists. So we really want to look at ways to enhance the quality of our life while we are living. So there's going to be a lot of information on today's episode, and I just want to be clear that I'm going to have links in the show notes, which is available online in my in the Time to Teach blog, so that will be listed at the end with the URL, but all references will be included in the show notes. So let's go ahead and begin by just looking at some of those positive emotions that are said to be found within the realm of happiness. So a researcher, Barbara Fredrickson, and not her alone, but she's kind of the big one where I'm pulling from right now. She has found these following positive emotions to be experienced when we're looking at happiness or positivity. There is the emotion of joy, gratitude, serenity, interest, hope, pride, amusement, inspiration, awe, and, of course, love. So if you think about it, these emotions are emotions that, you know, these are things that we like to experience. These are things that feel good and, you know, may even lead to curiosity and other things because they, you know, they do produce positive or desirable outcomes. So these are the positive emotions. And Fredrickson also has a theory that she came up with called broaden and build theory. So I'm just going to read a little excerpt from an article that just kind of explains her theory, but it says, further research from her, Fredrickson, Barbara Fredrickson, on this theory, and quote, confirmed that positive emotions both lead to and result from broad-minded coping. And that was coming from work that Fredrickson and Joyner did back in 2002. And continue with the quote, and showed that a specific positive emotion, mindfulness, increased cognitive flexibility, and expanded cognitive scope, which results in a deeper capacity for finding meaning and engaging with life. End quote. So it's very interesting because this is why I wanted to include a little piece on positive psychology, because I think we really need to understand why having hobbies and passions and really trying to find a deeper meaning in our life is so important, because it really does enhance our overall quality of life and has been shown to, you know, you kind of, it builds when, once you have experience these positive emotions, they kind of lend themselves for further exploration or further understanding, which might lead to, you know, in developing skills in different areas and just really overall enhancing your life. So very interesting theory that Fredrickson has developed. Now, there have been some very specific ways that positive emotions have been shown to be beneficial in one's life. So I'm going to speak on that now. One of the ways that these positive emotions are very beneficial to us is that they really help to reduce our overall stress and help with our overall well-being, right? So our mental and emotional and psychological and physical state has been shown to be improved because of positive emotions. They also help us with dealing with things that come our way, right? So if you're the more positive emotions that you have, you just kind of improve the way that you react and you cope with adversity, because, you know, when we're looking at having a happy life or positive life, it doesn't mean that only happy things and wonderful positive things are going to happen to us. No, that's not what it's about. We're all humans, so we're all going to experience negative things in our lives. That's, you know, part of being humans, part of being who we are and what happens. but you know, we can develop better coping skills, and that has been shown to be true through positive emotions. So the more that we experience this, we just get better at coping with things, you know, that are with coping with them in a positive way, and also being resilient. So that it has been shown that we become more resilient, and that basically sums up what I'm trying to say, that we can deal with negative things in our life in a more positive way, and just kind of come back to feeling okay and feeling well again. Another way that positive emotions help us is by increasing our performance and our engagement. So it makes sense. It makes sense that if you're experiencing a lot of positive emotions, you're probably going to do more to seek out that, you know, those same emotions, right? And when you feel good and you're happy, and just keep in mind the definition that I gave you of happy, that happy doesn't always mean happy, but content and fulfilled and with purpose. So when we feel like that, I think it makes sense that, you know, we're going to perform better, right? I mean, when I think of my own self as a teacher, I work hard as a teacher, and I'm constantly trying to improve as a teacher. I've been a teacher now, almost 9 years. So I'm constantly learning as a teacher, but I feel like I'm constantly improving as a teacher because I want to improve as a teacher. Because I have definitely had positive emotions experienced with my teaching and overall in life. So I feel much more fulfilled in life. And that leads me to seek ways to be, you know, how can I improve more and feel even more happier? So I think that makes sense when we put it into context with our own experiences of when have I been motivated? When have I performed really well? And what were those factors that led me to perform well and be engaged in my work? So that was an interesting finding. And also something else that I think is very interesting that has been linked with positive emotions, making healthy choices. Again, when I put that into perspective with my life, I feel like that does make perfect sense. You know, I think when you're experiencing these positive emotions, you're fulfilled in life and you're satisfied. Even if I think you can still be satisfied, but, you know, craving more, because I feel like I am that person. I'm the one who's always like, I want to always work on me and make myself better. So I'm always looking for ways to do that, but not because I'm not satisfied, just because I do find it so satisfying to be, you know, constantly developing who I am as a person. So because I am so satisfied and fulfilled in life, yeah, I'm going to seek healthier choices because I value my life, and I value that limited time that I have on earth. I want to make the best of it, so I'm going to seek healthier choices. Whereas maybe if I weren't as content and fulfilled in life, maybe I wouldn't look for ways to prolong my life. So I think that all makes sense when I put it into context of my life, and hopefully that makes sense for you. Again, I'm going to have all of this in the show notes because there's just a lot of information. I have a lot of resources for you, so you can see exactly where I am pulling these studies from. But it's just really, really important, I think, to just keep in mind that, you know, the field of positive psychology is really kind of changing the way we look at psychology, whereas in the past, it used to be, psychology used to be, you know, dealing with the negatives, but luckily someone figured out that we also want to look at the positives of psychology and how to promote emotional and psychological and mental health and well-being, so that, you know, we're taking more preventative measures instead of, well, no, now this is happening, so now we've got to try to address it, which is important in itself. But if we can do preventative measures and look for ways to make ourselves happier and fulfilled and satisfied and content, that we should be doing that. So it's a relatively new field, and I think new understandings and information is going to just be increasing in this field. But it is a very important field. I've been interested in positive psychology probably for the last 3 years now. And it all started with a math course that I took, believe it or not, how to learn math. So I was doing that so I could become a better math teacher, and really kind of stumbled into the whole positive psychology. But it is important, and it's important for us to have at least a basic understanding before we can really understand why, you know, all of these other things are important in our lives as well. The next thing I want to talk about is growth mindset versus fixed mindset. And there's a lot that can be said on this matter. There's a lot that has been said, and I definitely have in my podcast plans, because you guys probably know by now I'm a planner, and yes, I have that in my plans. Have my whole year planned out. But there's so much that can be said, and I will speak more on a growth mindset. But what I really want to talk about is, just I want to introduce to you what that is in case you're not familiar with it, because it has so many implications on us as teachers, and so many implications on learning and the classroom. So I'm not going to get into all of that today. Like I said, that's for definitely another episode. But to really understand a little bit more about how positive psychology fits in, understanding growth mindset is another aspect that I feel is very, very important to at least have a basic understanding. So I'll start with Carol Dweck, who you may or may have not heard of, but Carol Dweck is a researcher. It's really her work that discovered growth mindset and fixed mindset. And now it's just kind of this, there's been a lot of work. She's been working on this for over 30 years. I'm not entirely sure how long, but definitely over 30 years. So basically the premise of what she has found through her work is that people hold one of two mindsets, that you either hold a growth mindset or a fixed mindset. So if you're someone who holds a growth mindset, you don't look at your performance as fixed and as overall a generalization of what you can do and what you know. Basically, you look at you put emphasis on the processes and the strategies on how to get an end goal, and you know that your performance right now is malleable. So it's, you know, this is where I am right now. Thinking about it as a brand new podcaster, I know I'm not perfect, but I'm learning every episode. I'm learning new things. Granted, I have never podcasted before the show. I came into this knowing nothing about audio editing. This has been an experiment for me. I've been teaching myself and learning as I go. So, this is because I do have a growth mindset. So I don't beat myself up, because yes, I'm aware of the many mistakes that you have probably even picked up on in my, previous episodes. I'm sure my current one and my future ones, I will still be making plenty of mistakes. But because I have a growth mindset, I don't let that hinder what I'm trying to do. I just look at it as an opportunity to grow more, to learn. And every time I listen to my episodes, I'm like, oh, I said too many times, or oh gosh, back in episode one, somehow I uploaded that episode and I had two tracks overlapping. So I'm sure that was picked up on, and I never addressed it until now, because I realized my mistake and I took it as a learning opportunity. And now every time I'm being super careful to make sure that those tracks don't overlap so that I don't have that same error. But now if I looked at that first episode and said, oh boy, that was horrible, you know what, I need to stop podcasting because I just don't, I can't do it, then I would never be able to develop into, you know, what I hope to develop to. So growth mindset is basically where you're emphasizing the processes, the strategies. That's where you're putting the emphasis, and you know that you can eventually get to a better performance place than where you maybe currently are right now. With that understanding, it's probably understood what a fixed mindset is. A fixed mindset is one that says, you know, this performance is, it is what it is, right? I can't really grow from there. Like, I'm either a good athlete or I'm not. I'm either a good artist or I'm not. I'm either a good mathematician or I'm not. And in Carol Dweck's research, she's shown that those who hold a growth mindset are ones who end up actually performing and doing better than those with the fixed mindset. So someone who has a fixed mindset, you know, they don't take as much risks because they're afraid of failure. They don't embrace failure. They don't embrace mistakes. And because of that, it hinders what they even try to do. So I think, you know, we can see where with the growth mindset, if you are a person who has a growth mindset, you're going to be more of a risk taker. You are going to pursue opportunities. You're going to, you know, go out on a limb and try things that maybe a person with a fixed mindset will not do, because that person is so afraid of failure and thinks that this failure, this mistake speaks to who I am as a person. So afraid of that, that it prevents them from further developing in an area where they otherwise could develop. And this is something that has really transformed my life as a teacher and as a person. But again, that's for another episode. But it's really important to understand that Carol Dweck's work has shown that, you know, wherever you lay in your mindset is really going to be important in determining your successes in life because of your beliefs. So it's very important, and this ties into the positive psychology, and it ties into our hobbies. And I think now we have established a basic understanding of how and why positive psychology ties into this. So now I'm going to go ahead and start speaking on hobbies and how that helps us to achieve that work and life balance. It's important to remember that as much as we can get really involved in our profession of teaching, I mean, I know myself, I'm involved in online teaching groups. Obviously there's lesson planning. I get most of my lesson planning done at home, at school, but I do like to look up resources and get different ideas at home. So I do a lot of that. And I feel like because that's kind of exploring other things, it's not so heavy duty as all the other tasks that are involved in teaching. But we can get very, very involved in all the different avenues we'd like to take as teachers. And that is absolutely great because we're always, you know, as teachers, we want to always be current. And I don't mean just with the current trends, but really, truly current and developing as teachers. But, you know, when we're thinking about work-life balance, it's also really important that we have other areas besides teaching that we are pursuing as humans. It's just healthy. It's extremely healthy. So it is important that we have some kind of hobby that we're doing, you know, that is unrelated to teaching. So, you know, if you're thinking about, well, what kind of hobby can I possibly do? It's important to start at your interest and just thinking about, you know, what are you interested in? What would you like to pursue? So for me, one of my hobbies, I guess if you can call this a hobby, it's, as I've already explained, I really just enjoy the act of exercising. And again, remember, I'm a lazy exerciser, so I'm not, you know, doing CrossFit. Nothing wrong with those of you who do. I admire your energy and I wish I could do something like that, but I'm too much of a lazy exerciser to do that. So I really just, that for me is kind of a hobby. At least we could call it an interest. I truly enjoy that. So I make time for that. And that I just feel like is extremely important. But another hobby that I have is gardening. Now, I'm not someone who has a real green thumb. It's actually my husband in the family who, that is truly a passion of his, and he loves growing our garden. We have a very, I don't even know if garden is the correct word. Maybe if you can think urban garden, you know, if you live in a large city like I do, live in the second largest city of Mexico. So outdoor space is very limited, and we rent a house and we have just a very little grassy area, but you know, most of what we have out there in our garden is potted plants. But I don't know, I feel like even though that's the case, I feel like I've learned so much about gardening and about, you know, not really good about remembering plant names, but I've just really enjoyed getting out there and just watering the garden, sometimes pruning. I say sometimes because my husband, of course, is like his real passion, right? So he does a lot of those gardening tasks because he just loves it. But I will go out there and I will prune and I will water. And it's really interesting to me the way that certain plants will let you know if they need water because they just wilt immediately. And other plants, they'll just start dying right away without even letting you know. And it's really hot here, so it's very easy for plants, even if you water it by, you know, the afternoon, they need another watering. So, just so you know, my plants are not being neglected. It's just very hot. So some of them will show how much they need water. I see some of them, it's actually just one. I don't know what kind of plant it is, but it's just a green leafy plant, and it just, the leaves by midday will just kind of turn down, and then I see it, they haven't changed colors, but they just turn down. I'm like, oh, they need a second watering. And then the fact that some plants do need more water than others, you just kind of pick this up as you're gardening. So for me, this has been an area where it's just so, you know, there's no stress involved. It's very low key. I go out and I can be among nature, and I just find the world so beautiful, and I find plants beautiful, and I love that surrounding. So for me, it's something that is free of stress and it's peaceful and lovely, and I enjoy it so much. So that for me is a hobby. Something else that I really like doing is reading. I love reading. I was an English major back in college, so in California, to be a teacher, you can major in anything. It doesn't matter. You can major in education or you can major in English like I did. And then from there, you just, go through the teacher credentialing program after you have your bachelor's degree. So, I majored in English because I love literature and I love books. Actually, when we came down to Mexico, surprise, surprise, the first thing that got packed up were my books because I was not going to leave them behind. So I packed them up first. But for me, this is just, again, it's kind of a way to escape reality. Not that I'm saying we need to escape from reality, but well, I kind of think when you have moments that you're focused on something else, it really is beneficial. So for me, it's reading, and I do nightly reading. I have a set time, of course, right, in my schedule, right before bedtime. So before I go to bed, that's my assigned reading time. And then also on the weekends, I get up, and then because I have more time on the weekends, so that's typically, unless I have something going on at work, which I usually don't do work on the weekends, but right now it's the end of the school year. So teachers, you know how that is. We've got grades due. We at my school are also writing narratives. So this is the time of year that I do end up bringing some things home because I only have so many hours in the workday. So, but typically it's weekend mornings that I will go ahead and do my reading, but I love it. I just find it, I feel like I've learned so much about the world. I've learned so much about the culture, even though a lot of what I read is fiction. I like a lot of literature that was written in the 1800s. So I've learned a lot about the culture, specifically British culture back then. And just because I read a lot of their fiction. And even though it's fiction, fiction is modeled after reality. So you still end up learning a lot about, a time period or the way that people might have done things. But it's just a very, I don't know, I just find it just very mentally stimulating because you get engrossed with these lives and then you start pondering things that maybe you would not have even thought about it if it weren't for that book. So it's just such a great way to do something totally different from teaching. And it just, makes me very happy. I love my books. So that's one of my hobbies. Love it. I love reading. Another thing, and this is, could be considered a hobby or not. It's also a necessity. Even though I do have, one of my recent changes or additions with the lady who comes and helps me clean the house has been that she is also doing the cooking twice a week. So that's great. That's just been specifically to help me to have more time in the afternoons with things that I'd like to do, like the podcasting and my blogging. But I actually really do enjoy the act of cooking. So for me, it's a very therapeutic time. A lot of times as I'm doing my cooking, I'm listening to a podcast. So I find it educational as well. So they're not necessarily, and most times not even teaching related podcasts. But as I've said before, I love many different kinds of podcasts. I listen to the news. And then I also just listen to others, a lot of NPR podcasts, but I just feel like I love those times when I get to listen to these podcasts and you get introduced to new ideas. Again, it's very similar to reading. That's why I enjoy it. I'm exposed to these ideas that in ideas and perspectives that maybe otherwise I would not have been introduced to. So having a hobby, whatever your hobby is, something that you're interested in pursuing, I feel is really important in the work and life balance, and it's going to, you know, it's going to help you experience those positive emotions. And a little side bonus is that through your hobby, you may actually develop certain skills and become more proficient in something that might trickle down into your professional life of teaching and help you that way. I know for myself, just, you know, the hobby of listening to podcasts, if that can be considered a hobby by itself, and I think it can be, but, you know, we're living in a different world, so maybe being a podcast listener is a hobby, I don't know, but I consider it one. But just, you know, the very act of me having listened to podcasts for the last, I don't know, 2 years of my life, I feel like that path has led me down to now becoming a podcaster myself. So if you can see where the benefits of your hobby can actually, you know, trickle down and help you in areas of your life. So helping you develop a skill, helping you with understanding, and it might go into your professional life. Or again, this is not really my professional life. This is, you know, well, kind of my professional life, because I'm, this podcast is for teachers and educators. So, yeah, that obviously has something to do with my professional life, but just the act of being an avid podcast listener, helped me to understand what, or at least feel like I understand what are some things that make a good podcast. And, you know, I was able to kind of learn through that authentic material. I was able to learn a lot from that. So you never know where your hobbies are going to take you. I mean, your hobby, so not only is it a great stress relief from any of the stress that you're undoubtedly experiencing as a teacher, but it's, you just don't know where that hobby is going to take you. You don't know the added benefits. And the benefits are just, I feel like there's so many that I'm probably not aware of it. So definitely, you, if you don't already have a hobby, find something that you're interested in and pursue it. Just pursue it. Even if you feel like, oh, well, I'm really interested in trying whatever it is, but I don't think I'm very good at it. Growth mindset. Don't worry about that, right? It's not about how you're performing, especially it's not how you're performing right now, but enjoy the process of it. Enjoy the learning aspect of it and just, you know, take that as a launching pad. Begin right there and then develop those interests, and you know, what it becomes is limitless. The only limits we have really are the ones that we impose on ourselves. Don't put a boundary to it. Don't put a limit to it. Just pursue it. And whatever that leads to, it can only be great things. If nothing else, it's going to relieve stress and is going to help you to experience those positive emotions that we know are so beneficial for a positive and happy life. So, you know, pursue hobbies. Now, as adults, we have to really make that time for hobbies and really, you know, put extra effort towards cultivating those interests that are outside of our professional life. But when you're a child, that just comes so much more naturally. So to tell us a little bit about the hobbies they like to do and share some of their thoughts of what they think teachers like to do outside of school, here are a couple of friends for our next student segment. Enjoy. So for today's student segment, I have a couple of friends who are here to talk to us about the importance of having outside hobbies and activities. So, hello friends.
Hello.
So we have Y and E with us today. So how are the two of you doing?
Good.
Good? Okay. So I invited you on the show today so that you two can talk a little bit about the things that students like to do outside of school, because I imagine that you do other things besides school. Is that true?
Yeah.
Okay, so why, what are some things that you like to do outside of school?
I like building my Legos because I have a lot of Legos.
You're a master builder? Boy, I learn new things about you guys all the time. What kind of things do you build? Why?
One day I was building the Batcave of Batman. It was very big. And I have the whole city of Minecraft.
You have built an entire city?
Yeah.
I need pictures of this. Will you send me a picture?
Yeah.
I'd love to see it. E, what about you? What are some things that you like to do outside of school?
Yesterday, I made a supermarket about Shopkins, and I took a lot about making my Lego to the cafeteria because my supermarket will be very big, and I need all the things I need, and my supermarket got to be big because then we'll be only a store.
Wow, so you're kind of a builder too outside of school? Okay, so do you guys agree that it's really important that you have other things that you like to do besides just school?
Yeah,
I think so too. And I've been talking on the show to teachers, you know, it's a show for teachers, that it's really important as a teacher that we have things that we like to do besides just teaching, because you know how I love to teach, right? But I need to have other things that I like to do. So I wanted to ask you guys, what do you think teachers do when they're not at school?
I think they read and read, and they can go to meetings.
They read and read, and they go to meetings. What do you think their meetings are about?
Well, maybe of that is going to happen a celebration next day. They make a meeting sometimes for do that.
Okay, so they read and they have meetings about celebrations that are coming up. E, what do you think teachers do when they are not at school? What are they doing
Maybe
on their off time?
They take one book to their house, like the most magnificent thing. They read it and then they read it the next day.
Okay, so reading might be something that teachers like to do outside of school. Yeah, you know what? I agree. I know I have told you guys many times, but I read every single night before I go to bed. That's my reading time. I have a planned reading time, and that's when I read. Well, what other things do you think are good activities for teachers to do outside of school?
I think that they maybe can do, they can go with their families, and they can eat, and they can hang out. And maybe the mom can read a book to his family, or they can like invite their cousins.
Okay, oh, excellent. That sounds like a fun activity. So hang out with the family, even involve a book. What do you think? What's another activity that teachers can do?
Maybe they find a friend from a long time ago, and they go like to meeting, and she's like the school director because they're your friends, and then you'll make a meeting, and then she told you, you are going to do this in your class, you are going to do that in your class.
Excellent. Okay.
And that takes you how you teach her.
Okay, great. Those are some great ideas. I'm sure all the teachers are going to really appreciate those ideas of different things that they can do outside of school. So that is going to end our student segment. And I just want to say to the two of you, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, off you go. And there you have it, a few ideas from students about how you can spend your time outside of school. With that interview, we're also going to conclude today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you got a few tips that you can try. Don't miss next week's show. We have a final wrap-up show in the work and life balance series. Next week is gratitude and all that jazz. We'll see you next time. Now, wait a minute. Wait just 1 minute before you leave. Don't forget, you can find the show notes online. It has been moved to our new blog, Time to Teach with Tammy. That's Tammy with an I. blogspot.mx. And we are also on Facebook, and by we, of course, I mean I. That would be Time to Teach on Facebook. And don't forget, we also have a teachers group, Teachers for Effective Curriculum. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll see you next time.